Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Project MedTech. I'm your host, Dwayne Mancini. As always, if you need anything from the podcast or would like to suggest a future guest, please email us at info@projectmedtech.com. If you enjoy this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. And you can always visit our website, www.projectmedtech.com, or follow us on LinkedIn. This is another episode of MedTech Money powered by Project MedTech. This is a special series by Project MedTech where we have partnered with Mr. MedTech himself, Giovanni Loricella, in a series of podcast episodes focusing on money in the MedTech space. Giovanni's guest today is Gaston Vasir from Anaxago. In this episode, Giovanni and Gaston discuss early stage investments in MedTech, how they invest on a deal-by-deal basis through a network of investors, the MedTech scene in France and Europe as a whole, filling the gap in France between early stage investors and late stage investors, how the French government is supporting innovation, how the MDR is affecting MedTech deal flow, and more. So without further ado, Giovanni's discussion with Gaston Vasir.
Medical innovation starts with medical discussion. Talking about the future and what comes next with Project MedTech.
Gaston, thank you very much for joining us here. This is the MedTech Money podcast series, powered by Project MedTech and sponsored by Lifeblood Capital. And thank you for giving us your time to share what we'll get into, which is about the ecosystem and innovation environment within France right now, and also the role of an early stage VC venture capital firm within the French slash European landscape. So the purpose of why we're here is I've talked to thousands of medtech entrepreneurs and investors around the world. And what I've discovered is that there's really no silver bullet or specific formula about how to raise or invest capital in medtech. So my goal here was I'd like to extract insights and anecdotal stories from entrepreneurs, bankers, investors like yourself, so that we could help those who can benefit from the information and for generations of entrepreneurs and investors to come. And so I thought the audience that's likely listening in is a mixture of both experts and novices. However, what I wanted to do is extract your stories, insights, advice, so that we can share with what I imagine the first-time founder or CEO that has no clue about what lies ahead of them on their journey of raising capital. And so I thought the best place to start is by learning from experienced professionals like yourself. And getting back to what I mentioned earlier, the purpose of why you and I are here today is not only do I want to learn more about yourself and the firm, the venture capital firm that you represent, Anaxago, which we'll get into, but I really do want to focus on what's happening in France, the innovation ecosystem that's thriving right now, and then also the understanding of how an early stage VC firm positions itself within the European landscape. So we'll get into that. However, before all of that, I have a few open-ended questions that I'd love to ask you just to start the conversation and engage the audience so that we can learn a little bit more about yourself. So the first one is, do you believe that people and money are the lifeblood of a medtech startup? Why or why not? Or is there anything that I'm missing?
Yeah. First, thank you, Giovanni. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to speak with you or to participate in an event you host. To answer your question, yes, definitely. But I think it's important to dissociate those two elements, even if they are very closely linked. I believe that people come first because people are really the vascular system of the company, and the money is like the blood flow that is injected and circulates in the company and allows it to run. So I believe that people come before money because in fact, people attract money. People are really at the heart of the investment decision. Everyone knows that this is really one of the main elements we analyze, we assess as a VC when we look at a company as an investment opportunity. We look at the background of the manager team, expertise, network, ability to attract other talents, things like that. And some say that the market always wins, you know, but if you want to create something unique, you need the right team to drive the company to this market. So great team is really one of the shining green lights you want to see as an investor before pouring money into the company. And as I said, people and money are really close. People attract money, and money is obviously vital for a company. And I think it's even more the case for a medtech company and more generally health tech companies, because those kind of companies are literally on the drip financially. Medtech and also biotech companies take years to develop their assets, to create a product, to go onto the market, while most of them don't generate any revenue. So the team is really one of the few things that the company has to attract money. And this is even more true in early stage development of a startup. So to put it in a nutshell, yes, I agree, people and money are really the lifeblood of a medtech company, but people first.
And number two is directed more at you. Having built your career and now being a investor within the medtech, health tech, biotech ecosystem, if you knew what you know now about being an investor, a VC, would you do it all over again? Why or why not? Or how would you build your career differently if you could?
Yeah. I would do it again, probably. I love what I do. Really, I don't imagine myself doing anything else. Right now, being a VC is extremely stimulating. You know, best part of the job, you keep learning every day, you work with impressive people, great founders who share their visions with you, you help them to make it happen, and I think this is priceless. But would I do it again exactly the same way? I don't know, because one thing that is interesting is that there is not one background or one way to become a VC. You don't need a specific background. You can have a financial background, you can be an entrepreneur and switch to the other side, you can be an engineer, you can have a medical background. So in my case, that was a bit specific because I am passionate about medicine and finance, and life science, things that are very different. But I'm not a pharmacist or physicians like many health tech VCs. So it has not always been easy to fully understand some very specific topics like, cardiovascular MRI analysis through AI to prevent aortic stenosis, or, you know, very, very specific points. More recently, one of our last investments was made in a biotech company named Xenotera. And the company develops a sort of glyco-humanized antibody platform to produce immunological treatments. So this is much more easier to understand when you have a master's degree in molecular biology, of course. So if I had the opportunity to go back in time, I may choose a different academic path, but I would probably end up in the same spot.
Very good. And the last one, Anexigo, which is the name of your venture capital firm, what does it mean? What's the story behind the name of your firm?
Yeah, thank you for this question, because there is indeed a little story behind the name. The name is inspired from a Greek philosopher called Anaxagoras. I believe the translation is Anaxagoras. So he was a Greek philosopher of the 5th century BC, so pre-Socratic period for the ones who love philosophy. And Anaxagoras said that help the one who starts. So the idea was really to help entrepreneurs, early stage entrepreneurs. You know, this is really the DNA of Anaxagoras. But we wanted to do it with a very singular method, a purpose. And the objective was to reconcile investment and the real economy, which means, in other words, that to redirect savings towards those who need them and innovative companies. So the best way to materialize this purpose through the idea of helping the one who starts was to create a sort of crowd equity platform. Many things have changed since, and I believe we will talk about it later, but that was the idea, a sort of crowd equity platform, so that private investors could invest in innovative startups. And more importantly, they could have access to investment opportunities that are generally reserved for professional investors.
I'm glad I asked the question. I always know that there's a story behind a name, and I love the stories. Sometimes they're shorter than others, but they're usually creative or funny stories. So thank you for sharing that. So without further ado, Gaston Vasseur, investment manager of Anaxago, who are you? Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where do you come from? And then how did you finally make it to becoming investment manager for Anaxago?
So currently, indeed, I'm French VC based in Paris. You can hear it in my accent when I talk. And I've always been interested in medicine, life science, technology. So quite naturally, I graduated in finance. That's a bit weird, but more seriously, this field appeared to be also very interesting to me. So I started my career in private equity in PE at M Capital Partners, which is a regional private equity fund. And at the time, and I believe this is still the case, M Capital also had a venture capital activity with a very strong focus on medtech companies. They invested in some well-known companies or companies I really appreciate in the French medtech ecosystem, like Robocat, TerraPixel, or FineArt. And I was, and I'm still passionate about tech, so clearly private equity investments in traditional SMEs wasn't sufficient, you know. And I was, and I'm still also passionate about medicine and life science, so I have quickly decided to move from private equity to venture capital with the goal to focus on health tech investments. So I joined Anaxago in 2019 to invest in tech companies, health tech, but also prop tech and fintech, that are our three main sectors. And I am now investment manager at Anaxago, where I lead our health tech investment with Alexandre Hérault, who is an investment director at Anaxago.
And now that you've told us a little bit about Anaxago, leading us there, about the firm itself, how old is the firm? How big is the firm? Do you only do in early in stage investments, typical check size, that kind of stuff, to give some clarity on if startups are listening to us talk right now, and maybe they're in France or in Europe, they might be appropriate to reach out to you.
Yeah, okay. So maybe just a few words to give you the global picture, because Anaxago Venture Capital is the digital venture firm, or like the business unit, the activity, the VC activity of a larger group called Anaxago that was founded in 2012 which is a digital investment company driven by the idea that we want to offer private individuals the opportunity to invest in alternative asset classes. So everything started with the venture capital investment when the company Anaxago was founded in 2012. And basically now we have two financial arms. We invest in real estate, something completely different, and still venture capital. And in 2018, we decided to focus our VC activity on three sectors, the three sectors we know the best. That was prop tech, fintech, and health tech. So including medtech, digital health, and biotech, on which I am fully dedicated. And so as I said, Anaxago Venture Capital, I will just say Anaxago for the rest of the podcast, is a digital VC firm, and we operate exactly the same as any other VCs. We go through the same steps, you know, deal flow generation, analysis, due diligence, investment committee meetings. But the way we invest is much more different, because we don't have a 50 million euro or 100 million euro fund that we've raised and we plan to invest in the following years. We invest really on a deal-by-deal basis through our network of investors. So our investors, which can be considered as our LPs, are very diversified. We still have private investors because it's the DNA of Anaxago, but we have more and more professional investors, fund of funds, family offices, high net worth individuals. And the way we invest is that basically we create a special purpose vehicle, SPV, holding for each operation. So our investors have access to the deal we selected. They invest in the SPV and the SPV takes a stake in the targeted company. So this is for how we work, how we function. So basically, this is the same result as any traditional VC, you know, one line in the cap table of the company at the end. The economic models is quite similar, you know, fees for the investor, carried interest. But by that process, each investment operation is independent. You know, as a consequence, we are much more flexible. We have no liquidity obligation, which means we can do 6 investments in year 1, 2 investments in year 2. We are not pushed to invest the 50 million euro fund because we don't have one. So this is really the main singularity in terms of how we work. And maybe now a few words about our health tech investment activity.
And before you don't lose that idea. I just want to have one piece of clarity. And because it's not the typical push on that 50 million euro fund, like you were mentioning, do you also have the 10-year horizon, the 10-year timeline that you have to return, or is it very different than that?
No, it's very different. And in fact, it depends on the deal. Sometimes we invest in seed series A. We know our investors know that we will have to stay in the company for like 5, 8, 10 years. But when the investment we propose to our investors is much more mature, they know that they probably will have liquidity in 3 or 5 years, but we have no obligation.
Okay, interesting. So continue. I'm sorry for cutting you off. You were talking about your digital health.
Considering our investment thesis, we're convinced that France and more generally Europe are like a privileged place for health tech, you know. But despite continued breakthrough, the healthcare industry still faces major issues in making the healthcare system more efficient through leveraging tech and data. We need to tackle the rising healthcare cost. We obviously need to develop new treatments for cancer, CVDs, respiratory infections, to name a few. So by capitalizing on our experience, we built an investment thesis focused on 3 main pillars: personalized medicine, health digitalizations, and innovative therapies. So this investment thesis is voluntarily large, so then we can invest in various fields in medtech, digital health, and biotech, mainly in therapeutics, but also a bit in diagnostics. And that allows us to invest in various technologies, you know, like AI, ML in medical imaging, health data structuring and valorization, wearable medical devices, robotics, things like that. And of course, we have our favorite topics. We try to focus our investment in specific therapeutic domains and clinical indications that concern a large part of the population, like cardiology, oncology, immunology, and infections. So that is really for the global investment thesis. And maybe a few insights about our investment criteria. We deploy this thesis from seed extension to series C, our sweet spot being series A and series B. So we are really early stage investor, and we invest ticket size from 0.5 to 3.5 million as lead or co-lead in early stage medtech and digital health company. With the possibility to follow up investments for our portfolio companies. One other specificity is that we also operate on the secondary market for much mature tech companies with ticket size up to 15 million euro, which is still quite uncommon now in the French ecosystem. So roughly, we realize between 2 and 5 investments per year in health tech. And right now we have a health tech portfolio of 10 companies.
So to give clarity on that, the 2 to 5 investments that you make a year, the 10 that you have in your portfolios, and also generally the companies that you're assessing, do they all have a digital data component to them, software play to them? Or do you also look at the next heart valve, next catheter, next neuromodulation implant? Do you look at those pure medical devices? Or is there always some sort of digital AI, larger picture software component?
Yeah, in fact, we are really into those two types of investment. We look at pure medical devices if the tech behind is really a breakthrough, you know. And to be honest, right now, we are more in digital health, really AI algorithm applied to health issues, yeah.
So I want to lead that into what's happening in France right now. I personally have been seeing a lot of news, articles, blogs, people talking about this massive investment from the government into its own country and this massive amount of innovation that's coming out of France. Some people are saying Paris and France is the new innovation hub within Europe. In past, we've always associated engineering with Germany, for example, right? And obviously Germany being one of the largest med tech or medical device specific economies, right? So, but lately, when you think of AI, when you think of health tech innovation, it's almost synonymous with France at this point when it comes out of Europe. So tell us about what's happening in France. Why is this happening? And then are we seeing innovation, health and med tech in general, or is there more of a push for that AI software-based big data innovation rather than the classical medical device?
Yeah, good question. I think that to understand why this is happening, we have to focus a bit on the historical part because historically, health has always been a field of interest and a field of excellence in France. Of course, we sometimes say France benefits from one of the best healthcare systems with its own limits and failures, of course, but still. The national territory also concentrates renowned schools, top-notch research centers like Gustave Roussy and the Curie Institute for Oncology. We have also the INSERM, which is our National Institute of Health, which is the organization that fills the largest number of patents in Europe in biotech. We have a real historical ecosystem with different types of organizations, like the SAT, which are Organizations for Technology Transfer Acceleration, and whose role is really to value the academic knowledge and research, for example, by providing support in patent filling or in startup creation. And public and academic institutions are really a core part of the ecosystem. And they really represent 50% of the new company creations. But that's very, very important. And so we have a solid historical and scientific background in health. And I believe that helps to structure and a strong, very strong health tech ecosystem. Maybe another element that can explain this ecosystem is the various actors we have in terms of on an operational level. We have many incubators, accelerators, other entities that can operate as such, like Agoranov, Wilco, TechCare, Genopole, to name a few, and from which very promising startups came out. For example, Alan, Doctolib, DNS Scripts, Acticore have been in the same accelerator, which is Agoranov. The health tech ecosystem is not new. You know, the first incubator or accelerator was founded something like 20 years ago, and this explains why we have this level of maturity and this level of innovations, but also because we have the financial power, I think, to support that innovations. We start to see a very large network of business angels, early stage and late stage VCs, corporate VCs also. And I think that we start to have a solid ecosystems in terms of health tech VCs. More and more investors are realizing that biotech and medtech are creating strong technological barriers to entry. that the ecosystem is structuring itself to bring those solutions to the market, and that these new treatments and medical devices can, in the long term, revolutionize medicine and therefore become very profitable. So I think these are the causes of why we have a strong health tech ecosystem. In terms of specificity, we've seen some very big trends, key topics in the recent evolutions. Of course, telemedicine and teleconsultation, especially since last year because of the COVID-19 crisis. But less and less, and the market is now in some sort of consolidation phase. And we're also moving forward more complex tech to bring real telemonitoring and not just teleconsultation. So like medical device and software that can bring value, therapeutic value for the patients, patients that suffer from chronic pathologies like COPD. So, I think a large part of this development is focused on really digital health, all things that is close to AI and ML. I think that that's really a big part of the development, but we have also a very strong biotech field in the health tech ecosystem.
And thank you for sharing all that information on the innovation ecosystem. Do you think there's more of a push for the digital aspect of it, or is it still almost equal where the innovation is old school medical devices as we know them, meaning tangible physical devices, and also the digital health aspect of it? Is it a balance of innovation, or is there more on the digital health side?
I think we have quite a good balance, but in terms of funding, but mainly because a medical device company need more funding. So in terms of volume, it's quite stable, quite balanced. But to be honest, we see much more digital health companies at Anaxago because we, fundraiser gives us a lot of information about the industry, and they pushes a lot of companies in this field. So I would say that the future may be more into digital health, maybe, software, AI, machine learning, and less in real medical device, pure medical device as we know it. Yeah.
So I have only fragments or bits and pieces of information that I have from my network, my friends, from being in France, from actually helping build some of the teams over in France. But I'd love it from your perspective. This is a cultural question specific to France. So there's a lot of innovation happening in France right now. And when you think of startups, whether it's in the movies or whatever it may be, it's these people who are in the office for 12, 14, 16 hours a day. They work 7 days a week, and that's startup life, right? However, France is quite well known for the 35-hour work week. And so you, as an investor into French innovation, where it's about the early stage people, it's about getting things built, innovated, over the line, growing. Culturally speaking, and for those who don't know about what we're asking about right now, or those maybe in France who are maybe smiling right now, just from your perspective, how does that work culturally? Does it affect the 35-hour work week in France? Does it affect startups, or is there things that people just don't adhere to and you can still work 12, 14, 16 hours a day if you want?
Yeah, the 35 hours a week is a real thing in France. I won't lie, but I think that's not really the case for the startup ecosystem. Because people, and this is really the case in health tech, because people are really passionate about what they're doing, so they really don't count the number of hours they work. People are working 7 days per week. So now people are really fully dedicated. And I think that now some foreign investors are started to see France as a very efficient country, you know, or at least efficient people in terms of quantity of work that you can achieve. And that's why we have more and more US investors that were they are starting to invest in French tech companies.
And when you have a focus on France, being based in France, do you also look outside of France, or is it heavily focused on France?
Yeah, we're starting to look at in Europe, a bit in the US, but the US market is very specific. And honestly, we don't really have the key, we think, to completely understand the market. So I would say that 85 or maybe 90% of our deal flow is based in France. But there's also a great disparity in France, even if it's a very small country compared to the US. You know, you have very specific technological hub clusters in France. Of course, there's the problem of the concentration in Paris. I would say that in our French deal flow, 80% of the deal flow, French deal flow is focused on Paris and the region Île-de-France. And that could be a problem because I think the global French tech ecosystem is very too much focus on Paris. And that's a pity because we have great regional hubs, great technological clusters. I think about Grenoble and Lyon, Bordeaux. At Anaxago, we have several companies in our health tech portfolio that are based outside of Paris, like Rouen, Marseille, Nantes. And I think that maybe some French investors, but surely some foreign investors are missing something, that they should not only focus on Paris, but also on the rest of the country.
I've talked to numerous investors throughout Europe, and there seems to be a trend. First and foremost, the trend is typically earlier stage investments, maybe seed to series A, not to say that later stage investors in Europe don't exist. They do. For the sake of this conversation and the ones that I've interviewed, it's typically been earlier stage. And because of that, there's also a focus regionally, right? So like, as you mentioned, a lot of your deal flow comes from France and even more specifically Paris. I've talked to other investors who focus in the Netherlands and even more specifically counties or provinces within the Netherlands, right? And already a very small country. Other private investors who focus on the Benelux region, other ones who have very similar to you, most of their deal flow only in Italy. So is there a cultural reason why, and maybe because I'm a bit biased, I'm here over in the US right now, big country, as you mentioned, and typically when VCs, angel groups are a bit different. Sometimes they can be geographically or regionally focused. Some of them do go coast to coast, but VCs typically look coast to coast and maybe even internationally, depending on how large the fund is. But in Europe, especially on these early stage investors, is there a cultural reason or a business reason as to why they are typically focused on their countries or their immediate provinces or regions?
Yeah, I think there's a cultural reason for that. I don't really have the answer to that question. I'm sorry, but that's true. Many French VCs are focused on France, even if we are starting to see more and more large venture capitalists that are looking in Europe, but only a few VCs really dare to go in the US or in Asia, for example. So it's generally stay in Europe and more generally in France. The reason also is maybe for the Alstec is that we're starting to live the best part of the health tech ecosystem. We've reached a certain level of maturity, I think. One sign is that the amount of money invested in tech, including health tech, rise faster than the number of deals. We don't see a lot of mega rounds as in the US or even in the UK, but we now regularly see important Series A and Series B. So I think that now there is a certain level of maturity, and French VCs want to want to benefit from it. You know, we have a great potential companies. There's almost 2,000 health tech companies in France. So I think the idea is, okay, just focus on your country and maybe look at the other countries in Europe, but maybe focus on your country because you can have the next unicorn that is going to be in France.
And I know that I'll be forgetting many and leaving names on the table, but France also has some very big, well-known VCs internationally, Sofinnova, Truffle Capital, for example, smaller ones, meaning earlier stage as well, similar to Anaxago, like we are talking with you right now, Carista as well. There's a lot of innovation happening within France, but there's also a lot of investors within France. Do they all know one another? Do they all syndicate one another? How is the actual ecosystem amongst the VCs in France? And is that also part of the reason why there's a lot of money in France to be invested? And also there's a lot of potential innovation that could happen. So maybe that's the reason why it does happen. Talk about that.
Yeah, that's right. There are a lot of VCs in France. And honestly, most of them, maybe too many of them, are on the late stage investments. Honestly, there is a sort of gap that needs to be filled in early stage. We don't really have the real early stage VCs or ecosystem of VCs that target pre-revenue companies that only have a sort of prototype. Most of the French VCs are really focused on Series B and plus. Maybe that's a shame, and as a consequence, you face a lot of competition between the VCs. That's it. And concerning the environment and how they work together, honestly, I think that French VC are quite friendly in some sort. We see a lot of syndications, yes, and. My personal opinion is that you are much more clever if you are one or two, three VCs investing in one company, because you will have a board meeting that will be much more diversified, much more different opinions. And this is like, you put your knowledge in common, and I think that's a good thing.
So, with deals that you look at, do you also have to build the network of VCs and investors outside of France as well? I know that obviously a lot of focus of what you do is in France, but networking, and we also know that part of a VC's job is being a professional networker. Specific to Anaxago, is it very French focused, or do you also force yourself to understand what the VC environment is like in Belgium or in the Netherlands or Spain or Germany? Do you have those networks as well?
Yeah, we're trying to really to open our frontiers and to go Spain, UK, Germany, Italy. But concerning the syndications, when we have international syndications on deal, most of the time it's because there is a VC, a foreign VC, that just spotted the deal and decided to go in it. Right now, we don't have the same network in Europe as we have in France. So most of the time we just push the investment opportunity to our VC friend in France and not really in Europe, but that's just the beginning, I think. And we still have some international syndications. You know, just recently we closed a deal in a biotech company in oncology. There was an Italian investor. There was also INAG from Prague. I think that in this global world, you don't really have to push the investment opportunity to your network to have international syndications. You know, everyone is starting to look at international deals, international investment opportunities. So things are just creating by themselves.
You mentioned earlier on the gap between later stage investment versus early stage investment. Before venture capital money even gets involved, for example, in Israel, there's the Innovation Authority, where they give grants or loans to very, very early stage startups to get them off the ground, to help create them very, very early, well before traditional VC could even get involved. Is there anything like that in France? For example, if I'm a PhD student and I come up with an idea, and as opposed to staying in academia or joining another company, I want to create my own health tech or med tech startup, and I have my own idea and I have no money, but maybe I have a few friends who also would like to do it with me. Are there sovereign or national resources, grants, funding sources in place that come from the national government that help out early stage innovation well before VC gets involved in France?
Yeah, of course. And more than financial support, they have also operational support with the SAT, the Organizations for Technology Transfer Acceleration, I talked earlier. But yes, there's a lot of money that could be injected from public organizations. I think globally, the French government has a real role in the rise of the French ecosystem. Over the past few years, many measures have been developed to help the sector, especially in terms of financing, grants, subsidies from BPI France, the CIR, which is the research tax credit. There's also the GEI status, which is a status given to young innovative companies, and that's opens door to more subsidies and grants. And really, beyond financing, the government is also initiating more concrete and practical actions. For example, in October 2018, they launched the Health Data Hub, which is a unique facility or system for sharing between producers and users of health data. So yeah, I think that in some public way, there's a lot of financing available in the market. And as we mentioned earlier, we have also this sort of regional hub that are created on the country. So Grenoble, Lyon, Nantes, Bordeaux, all these cities have their own regional financing specificity. So you can have national grants, but you can also have regional subsidies and grants given by a specific hub. And I think that's interesting for the health tech companies.
In terms of the complexity of investing into a French startup, being a French investor, when we talk about timing, and I don't know the answer, that's why I'm asking the question. We often hear about the bureaucracy involved in France and some of the challenges that things may take a little bit longer because you have to go through all these different processes. In terms of being an investor, from the time that you meet a startup until the money from your firm goes into that company, that startup, how long is that typical time? And is there, from what you know, is there any extra complexities that go into investing in French startups because of that potential bureaucracy that may not exist in other countries?
Yeah, that's a good question. First, I think that the bureaucracy is really focused on the public financing, you know, because you have to file to complete a lot of files, reports to be eligible to those financing. I think that's much more easier for private financing to get financed by a VC or a business angel. I don't think we take really much more time than other traditional VCs in Europe. I think in the US it's much more different, but typically, if we started to have a chat with the founder, we can draft a term sheet in 2-3 weeks, and the time we take to make the due diligence, etc., and we invest in 1.5 or 2 months after the first meeting. So I think that's it's still fair. You can go faster, of course, but that's still, I think, a normal length of time to invest in the company.
And we had something finally happen in Europe this year after a postponement for a year of the European Medical Device Regulation. So they were originally supposed to be implemented in May 26th of 2020, and then they were postponed for a year for COVID, and they just got implemented a couple months ago. I spent my career looking at med tech startups going after CE mark first before pursuing the FDA. And ever since the announcement of these implementations of the European Medical Device Regulations back in 2017, which now finally are implemented, there's been this slow shift of slow, and depending on who you ask, maybe fast shift of companies now looking to the FDA first as opposed to CE mark. And we still have probably another couple, 2-3 years before the whole ecosystem of the regulatory notified bodies, et cetera, figures itself out over in Europe. With that change of regulation in Europe, have you seen any change in deal flow? Does that mean anything for European venture capitalists looking at innovation occurring in Europe? Does the European Medical Device Regulations change any of that?
For now, honestly, I didn't really see a difference. The idea that the device regulation is moving and you have to deal with it. So I think it's the impact is much more important for your portfolio companies that did not already have the CE mark and that will enter in a new struggle because they will need to fulfill new obligations depending on the new medical device regulations. But on the deal flow, honestly, I didn't really see a difference for now. Maybe there's still time to impact the deal flow, but for now it's okay.
And your particular perspective, your opinion, we talked about France being this strong innovation ecosystem. We talked about how it's put together early stage investments, later stage investments, government grants and public funding. With the focus on France on itself right now of investing in itself to create all this innovation, all the ecosystems of VCs that we've been talking about, where do you see France in the future? What role does France play in the med tech, health tech ecosystem specific to Europe? Or even on a global scale, your perspective?
I share the vision of our president. Really, I think that France is going to be a leading nation in terms of health industry and innovation. You know, that was his own terms very recently, 2021, probably in July, when the president has said to the Strategic Council of Health Industries, this ambitious goal to make France a leading nation in health industry. And I think that's really the path we are taking right now, because as I said, the ecosystem is gaining in maturity. There is money on the market, there is innovations. We have all the tools to be a great nation on a European level to be a leader in this industry. So times will tell us if we are right or wrong, but I think we have all the cards in our hands to be this type of country. In the world, I think the question is much more complicated than that. I think that US will still be a leading country as well. You know, the French startup are still very interested in the US market. As you say, that they are still interested in getting the FDA before the CE mark because the market is huge. So I think France will be a leading European nation, but maybe not a world leading European.
And to wrap it up, to make it very clear, in terms of styles of specific technology, digital health, health tech, med tech, are there any certain types of technologies that France is known for right now, meaning that they almost have a specialty in, whether it's producing great university degrees and academic centers that have engineers come off that are really good in this particular technology? Is France known for anything specific?
Yeah, I think we're quite good at AI, machine learning, everything that is close to medical imaging. But I think we have a much stronger expertise in terms of medical field. You know, like oncology, cardiology, immunology, rather than technological expertise. Yeah.
And my last question for you is focusing back on yourself and what you can share with other people who aspire to be in your position right now, a health tech, med tech VC, venture capitalist. What advice would you give to those? You started off earlier on this podcast saying that there's really no one pathway to becoming a venture capitalist. There's certain avenues that maybe you can find patterns of people who end up becoming venture capitalists, but it's a strong network and it's not necessarily a very clear path. In terms of how to become a VC or what to expect when you are a VC, what advice would you give to those who are sitting here saying, I've never been a VC, but I've either been in the industry or I've studied finance or I have an ambition to become a venture capitalist and work with entrepreneurs? What advice would you tell them on what it's like to be a VC? And if you have an aspiration to become one, how to go about it?
I would tell them though, just to try it, you know, because it really it's worth it. That's very exciting as a job, as a day-to-day job. Of course, you need to expect some long hours because your entrepreneurs work hard, so you need to work as hard as them. But that's really a job you want to do. Honestly, if you're curious, if you like to learn every day, if you like to support people and help them making things happen, you know, and you're passionate about tech in general, you know, just have a try and you won't be upset.
Gaston Vasseur, investment manager of Anaxago, thank you so much for your time, for your insights, for telling us what's happening in France and how to go about it in this innovation ecosystem. And we greatly appreciate everything that you shared with us today. This is MedTech Money, demystifying raising capital. Thank you, Gaston.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you need anything from the podcast, you can always contact us at info@projectmedtech.com. Thanks for listening and have a great day.